space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
It was that ant that stood up to me.
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one ant.
Ooh.
One ant.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one ant.
Yeah, boss. They're puny.
Puny? Say, let's pretend this grain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this?
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up.
Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life.
It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
my friend.
He's got a laptop. There it is. He's got a laptop.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html. As well as if you scroll down there on the super chat, you can click on the People for People radio link and go over there and say hi to those wonderful people. So, finding truth seems to be impossible. You know, I've been spending many years looking into alternative energy. And I listened to all the reasons why they said that we needed clean, renewable alternative energy. But in the process of looking through all that stuff and studying and researching all these different devices and ideas and stuff like that, I noticed that there was a trend, a major trend of suppression, disinformation, you name it. It's like, it's mind-blowing how much there are people out there that are literally faking over Unity and free energy devices and basically getting clicks, and how YouTube seems to promote that kind of deal. There's also scams out there where they tell you about a free energy device, such as maybe like the Hendershot generator, which how would you know it was any good if you didn't try to build it? Of course, I haven't tried to build it, and I probably won't try to build it. The thing is that you got people out there like the Mythbusters who basically poo-poo any idea that has anything to do with free energy or over Unity or zero point. If you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough. Now, that's easy to say because you don't want to pay electric bill. You don't want to run your you want to run your house, you know, basically self-contained, which I fully know is possible. But until you get an actual working device on the table for people to see, then you know it's just talk at the moment. And so, you know, with that said, there were lots of inventors that didn't fare so well in the history of the time I've been, you know, researching all this information. And when you hear about a free energy device and you go look into it, sometimes it's hard to find, you know, really good, credible information. Sometimes you have all this, other people out there that are doing supposed debunking videos and something like that. It just seems like that no matter what, there's always somebody out there that is trying desperately to ensure that this type of ideas and technology doesn't take a foothold. Now, they claim the laws of physics basically make free energy, over Unity, zero point, or even perpetual motion impossible. Of course, they quote and most generally misquote the laws of thermodynamics in order to say that it's not possible. But regardless of all that, if you factored in the thing that I was trying to show during my Free Thinkers video about how you can pull power from all different directions, who cares what it's called? If it'll run for years at a time without any major maintenance or, you know, anything like that, then, you know, isn't it doing the job? I mean, if you look at solar, they say solar is inefficient because the sun isn't out all the time. Well, maybe the sun isn't out all the time, but at the same time when the sun isn't out, the wind could be blowing, or, you know, you could actually have some thermal energy that you have access to if you live anywhere near an ocean or a waterway. You could have hydroelectrics, or, you know, the wave motion of the ocean making power and so on. So one of them in itself might not be, you know, up to running your house 24/7, you know, 365 days a year, but all of them in conjunction together with a model specifically designed to pull power no matter what's going on out there. This is what I've been talking about for the longest time. Now, it seems that free energy is a term that likes to it becomes taboo. You talk about free energy and people kind of look at you sideways, especially if they believe themselves to be educated. And if they believe themselves to be educated and they think they're smarter than you and they want to keep that edge on you, they're not going to want to tell you that you're right. They're not even going to want to, you know, humor the idea. No matter what I've come up with, I've had people call me all kinds of names. You know, I've been insulted so many times via YouTube, it's ridiculous. But part of that probably lies in the fact that there's a doggone big movement out there to make a lot of money with video clicks and all this kind of stuff. and videos like mine and others that, you know, are actually working on, you know, true solutions to the problem that they say exists, well, they get pushed to the bottom, sometimes completely out of sight. And, you know, with that said, it's frustrating because if you got a good idea and somebody takes that good idea and they run with it, they might actually get something accomplished. But it seems to me it's like this world doesn't really want free energy. I mean, the people do. I mean, because you can imagine what benefits it would be if everybody had access to electricity and you know, heating and cooling and so on. But I'm going to start off playing this little podcast right here. And listen to this guy here.
Okay, welcome to another one of my videos where I like to
expose the frauds.
Now, there's another free energy device on YouTube. It's labeled as a free energy magnet generator or an over-unity device. And now you have to understand, the reason why I put these videos together is not because I personally believe they work. It's because I want to prevent people from wasting their time and money by trying to duplicate some of the circuits that they see on YouTube. And the only way for me to do that is by duplicating it exactly as I saw online, so you could see that it does or does not work. In this case, it does not work, so you know that you don't have to try duplicating it. And I looked at the video online that the individual uploaded, and I did a very careful look at his schematic. I saw exactly how the windings went through the core, as well as how many turns went through the core. Now, the capacitors are what you see here. This yellow capacitor, it's an AC capacitor. That's a 0.47 microfarad. I tried several different values. I've tried a 220 nanofarad, which is a 0.22, and I tried a 0.19, and I even tried a 0.63, so I can confirm that the values are not going to make a difference. The blue is the same value as the yellow, just a different rating and a different manufacturer. I also made sure the diodes are positioned properly. If you look here, both are facing in the same direction according to his video. And I also used an incandescent 12 volt lamp. This one draws less current than the one he used in his video. Now, the only thing, these diodes you see here are 1 amp. He used a 3-amp diode. That doesn't make any difference. I tried several different types of diodes. I tried the 1N400 series. I tried fast diodes. I tried ultra-fast diodes, as well as Schottky diodes. And the one you see here is an ultra-fast rectifier diode, a 1-amp. The core I made, I cut it out of a laminated iron core, bolted it together, precision cut on the magnet. That's a neodymium. Actually, this turned out much nicer than what you saw in the other person's video. More professional looking, neat. So let's give it a try and see what's actually going on here. Now, to show you that the battery is a good battery, because sometimes people will say, oh, he's using a battery that's dead, it might be a trick. So look at the meter, Mr. Probes. If there was a battery hidden inside the meter to show 9 volts, when I do this, you would see it. Nothing. We're going to check the battery's voltage. Show you that it is 9 plus. We have 966. Okay. This bulb definitely has a good filament in it. And the windings are going the exact same way. Same number of turns. I use 14 gauge wire. Now, according to the individual, as soon as you touch the, in his case, he did the negative to this side a few times, you should get the magnetism going and have the light up. So let's give it a try. And as you can see, you don't see anything going on with that bulb. And I got news for you, you are never going to see anything going on with that bulb, because it is another YouTube scam video. Unfortunately, they put these videos out there in order to get people to view their videos so they can make money on the views, as well as try and find investors that they can scam. If a circuit like this actually worked, there would be lots of devices that would not require batteries or only require the battery to get it started. And then once it's started, you no longer have a need for your battery. And of course, as I said in my other videos, the person would not be placing the video on YouTube. Instead, they would be seeking the assistance of a patent attorney to get this idea patented so they can make some real money off the invention. So it is a scam, that's for sure. You can't make it any nicer than the way I made it. Everything is precise. And more than likely, the way the individual did it, inside one of these capacitors here, they probably popped it out of the plastic housing and possibly hid a LiPo battery, which is a lithium polymer. They're very strong. You can hide them in here, and you can get the circuit to power up that way to light up the incandescent lamps. Or there's a coil underneath the table or hidden in the floor, and this is being powered through induction. So it is absolutely 100% a fraud. Save your time and money, and do not try duplicating it. If you enjoyed this video, please rate it a thumbs up, subscribe, and post links to this video on other websites and blogs. Also, be sure to check out my video playlists as well. Thank you.
Okay, so I subscribe to that channel because I do like the fact that, to this man's credit, he actually built it, like the guy in the whatever video basically specified, and shows it didn't work. Now see, that's the try it before you deny it thing. That's what I like about that deal right there. And so there are people out there that are actually being helpful when it comes to stuff like that, trying to replicate designs or whatever. But there are also people out there that are not so helpful in that regard. Let's listen to this one here.
It's said that the genius can take the complicated and make it simple, and that the idiot takes the simple and makes it complicated. I want you to take a look at this for yourself and see which of these two individuals is the genius and which one's the idiot.
What is next?
The Bedini motor.
The Bedini motor. The Bedini motor is like the holy grail of the free energy freaks.
Hey everybody, Jeff Williams here with SJeffWilliams.com.
MIT's Dr. Gio Holmesy has been helping the guys by assembling the contraption, and with his pedigree, they're quickly in business.
Free energy, man. Here we go.
So what we did is we decided to download the blueprints to the Bedini motor and try to build one ourselves here in the shop.
It couldn't be simpler. A battery drives a motor which spins up a flywheel, which charges wire coils, which in turn recharge the battery. And bingo, a perpetual motion or over-unity machine.
It's important to keep an open mind and realize that all the principles that drive the over-unity machines operate outside of everything you've ever heard about science.
See if there's any truth to this thing, as far as charging batteries, and some of them even claim to have over-unity, if you understand what that is. So, we got the blueprints, put it together, and voila, it does seem to work.
Activate the modulator. Modulator activated.
A modulator switches the motor on and off, so preserving power while the flywheel keeps on spinning. In theory, replenishing the battery.
Okay, it's spinning up.
And here it is, in a nutshell. We're running two coils, and here's our rotor in the center, and our circuitry is in the back. And the rotor is nothing more than a little scooter wheel that we bought at Big Five. And then we put our magnets here in the end.
I can hear it getting slower.
Yeah, it seems like, yeah.
I don't think I need a meter for this one.
In a sudden burst of free energy, the Bedini machine runs down.
Sounds like my grandfather.
Oh, getting sick. It's draining more from the battery on each cycle than it's putting back in when it recharges.
That's the one big problem with perpetual motion machines. They're not perpetual.
Over unity, huh?
That's an efficiency of over 100%.
Kind of makes you feel all warm and fuzzy inside, don't it?
But if you mean it makes me feel like I feel about the Easter Bunny or Santa Claus, yeah, that kind of warm and fuzzy, because it's a fantasy!
In the front here, you've got your two transistors, one for each coil, and, of course, a potentiometer, which acts like a throttle gate. Then over here, you've got your two lead-acid batteries. One's a primary, and one's a secondary, or a charger. Over here, you can see our voltmeters. This is for the charger. We're running 12.21, and it's still climbing, as you can see. It's trying to climb up to 2.2, and then it'll keep going up past that. Our primary battery has been sitting at 12.14 and has been doing so for most of the day. So, in essence, yes, it does work. In order to build this little guy, though, it's really not that complicated.
So the lesson that I take from this video is that you can't trust national or international media to tell the truth about anything that could have a real financial repercussion on the global system. And you can't trust a professor from MIT to tell the truth about energy systems that could change the way that we get energy ourselves.
So, basically, you know, Mythbusters did another hack job on Bedini, and I don't feel like they did a good replication of it. Now, ask Jeff Williams. He actually has one down there, and it seems to be doing the job. At the very least, even if it didn't end up being, continuously running like perpetual motion like Mythbusters smarted off about, well, at the very least, it sure is ridiculously efficient to run all day long like Jeff was running it and, be able to maintain the battery and actually put a charge in the other battery as well. And so, you know, this is the problem. You got people out there who are, putting out, blatant scams. You got people out there who are trying to replicate things and don't seem to be able to get as far as they want with it. And then you got people out there who are doing everything they can to basically mock and ridicule anyone that's trying. Mythbusters, it's a fantasy, and this whole entire deal, it just drives me insane because, when Mythbusters did the doggone thing about the hydrogen technology and, they didn't do a good job of it first off, and they're supposedly, highly educated people or whatever, and basically they did a hack job on hydrogen technology. Hydrogen technology has been around for a long time. Stan Myers was driving a dune buggy back in the 70s that was running on hydrogen technology. And, to say that the laws of physics basically say you can't get free energy, I'm not going as far as to saying getting over unity, which I still don't even think that that's not possible. I don't think it's beyond the realms of possibility. And even perpetual motion, for that matter, I don't think it's beyond the realms of possibility. Now, I think with the standard model of how we actually use electricity, I think that we use it so inefficiently that we basically tear our appliances up and stuff like that. They get hot, they wear out. And so I don't think that the method by which we're actually using electricity in today's modern day is anywhere near being efficient. You hear all these people talking about, Energy Star, buying these appliances that are energy efficient, that run on less power. And I don't even believe that those are as good as they could be. I believe there's a whole lot of room for improvement in incredible efficiency. But it's hard to get there because of obvious reasons. Now, if you're selling oil, you obviously don't want people driving around using water for fuel, even though, you know, you break water down in its two components, and you got hydrogen and you got oxygen. Now, there's inefficient ways, such as electrolysis, to separate the hydrogen and oxygen from the deal. And that's one of the reasons why the Mythbusters said that you can't get enough power out. And a whole lot of people have done the same doggone thing. But Stan Myers wasn't using electrolysis. Stan Myers was using radio waves, high frequency, high voltage radio waves to ignite it. Another guy did it with salt water, you know, and made the salt water conductive, but it didn't even need the conductive portion of it. Just a mere fact that he was hitting it with high voltage, high frequency, and, you know, ignited the water, separated it. I mean, if you think about how your microwave oven boils water, you know, the science says water is a dipole molecule. It has a positive, it has a negative side on there. And so if you can rock it quickly with a microwave, imagine what you could do with a faster wave, a stronger wave, or even multiple waves coming in at the same exact time, and then be able to separate it and ignite it on demand. Well, it's not beyond the realms of science, and that's what makes me mad about the whole deal, because people will only take it so far, and, you know, that's it. You know, okay, electrolysis. Well, it takes a lot of amperage to do electrolysis. You're doing it the hard way. You're basically creating a dead short. You know, water in itself is not conductive until it has some sort of contaminant in it. Some metal or mineral, or like salt, or baking soda. So anything. Anything that puts a contaminant in that water will make it conductive of electricity. And so you got these two metal plates, you got regular water in there. Electrolysis will happen with just regular water, but not to the extent as that if you make it more conductive, it'll make it, it'll make even more hydrogen. But, you know, when it comes down to, radio waves, once again, go back to the microwave oven. Think about how the microwave oven actually cooks your food. Well, you know, when that if you understand that concept, and you know that if you leave water in the microwave too long, you can actually boil it away. You know, you can boil it into steam. So, you know, there's other uses for, you know, microwave technology and using water for fuel. I mean, you don't have to burn coal or, you know, nuclear power or whatever. You just have to be able to generate enough voltage to produce that radio wave that you're going to boil that water with. And, you know, it just boggles my mind how nobody's really, you know, stepped into that realm and seeing what was actually possible using what Stan Myers did back in the day. Now, you know, there's people out there to say that, you know, there's a document that the military is going to be running their ships on hydrogen technology by 20 whatever. So if the military's taking note of it, then, you know, chances are it really does work. There's a lot of researchers out there that just get angry and get frustrated and bail out because it ain't worth all the hassle. It ain't worth all the heartache of being constantly attacked verbally or whatever, or even physically for that matter, because there's a lot of researchers that didn't fare so well. Like I said earlier, that when they get close to something that really functions, either somebody comes in and takes it from them, or they threaten them and buy it out, or they end up dying. So that ought to be a red flag there. That ought to tell somebody something. So what's the whole point? Why even have free energy at all? Listen to this one here.
So here we are, a relatively immature species struggling with possible self-destruction. If aligning with the Taurus does hold the key to a new form of clean, safe energy access, imagine the implications. This could be the most important technology breakthrough of our times. So who wouldn't want to have an energy source that's unlimited and freely available? That turned out to be a key question. And that's what led me down the next rabbit hole. It turns out that scientists as far back as the early 1900s have been developing alternative ways to access electricity without combustion. Nikola Tesla believed he had tapped into what he called radiant energy. Many scientists believe he was accessing what's now called free energy. But before Tesla could finish the project, his financier, banker J.P. Morgan, who had a monopoly on the copper used for electrical lines, recognized how Tesla's invention could transmit electricity without wires. He then shut down Tesla's funding. Tesla's lab was burned down and he was ostracized, all for trying to implement his vision of unlimited energy for everyone. A modern-day inventor, Adam Trombley, was inspired by Tesla's work and by the possibilities of the torus. Trombley built a dynamo, a direct current generator that accessed electrical power right out of the air.
We were trying to demonstrate that by mimicking the magnetic field of a planet and rotating this device, we could actually create a dynamo that would work. And in fact, it did work, and it does work. So when we contemplate nature, when we contemplate Jupiter, or we contemplate a dynamo like the Earth rotating in space, we're basically talking about a magnet which is rotating in space. And the lines of flux of the magnet are pouring down and through in this toroidal pattern of the magnetic field. It's also expanding and contracting. It's breathing. It's taking in the energy of space literally and transforming it. Right here in this toroid, we have enough energy to transform the entire Earth. And that's not just a theoretical statement, it's literally true. To contemplate the implications of this means that every single place on Earth suddenly has power. Every single person on Earth suddenly has power. We have universal abundance.
Trombley had been invited to demonstrate one of his generators at the United Nations and the U.S. Senate. But these events were undermined by the first Bush administration. Then the device itself was taken in a government raid. Trombley's experience isn't unique. Almost every time I found an inventor with a promising new technology in the field of free energy, he told a similar story of suppression. Inventor John Bedini began working with Tesla's theories of radiant energy decades ago and has produced an assortment of battery charging devices that generate more energy than it takes to run them. He announced that he was going to start offering them at low cost. Soon after that, he was attacked in his lab and warned not to produce the devices. For his own safety, he had to let go of marketing free energy. These are all devices from labs I personally visited. Now, the quality of this footage is obviously poor, and I'm not expecting this to convince you. My point is that being there with these inventors, accompanied by experts, and seeing these new energy devices in operation convinced me that the technology is real. And the implications of that to me are absolutely thrilling. Canadian John Hutchison not only created some free energy batteries, but also used Tesla's theories to counter gravity, to make objects float. This could revolutionize the field of propulsion. His lab was raided and equipment was taken by police and government officials in 1978, 1989, and again in 2000. One of the scientists we were going to interview for this film was Dr. Eugene Malov, an engineer from MIT and Harvard, and editor of Infinite Energy magazine, which covers both theoretical and technological developments in the new energy field. Dr. Malov was mysteriously beaten to death in 2004.
We've had major military people at great risk to themselves say, yes, these things are real. Why do you think the military-industrial complex doesn't want that statement to be made? Because you start thinking about what kind of technology is behind that. That's the bottom line.
The energy is extracted from the fabric of the space around us, which means it cannot be metered. That is a direct threat to the single largest industry in the world. Energy. It's goodbye ExxonMobil, goodbye oil, goodbye coal, goodbye linear transmission of electricity to power lines, all that gone. Unfortunately, it's someone's $200 trillion piggy bank. The proven oil and gas and coal reserves are worth north of $200 trillion. This information coming out would completely change geopolitical power more than anything since, well, in recorded human history. And it would happen in a generation.
I started to examine the breakthrough solutions, and much to my surprise, these concepts have been proven in hundreds of laboratories throughout the world, and yet they have not really seen the light of day.
Rather than smashing things together and trying to control the explosion, these new technologies rely on blending, of dancing with what naturally is. The common denominator of all the free energy devices I've seen is that they mimic, in one way or another, the torus energy shape. You don't have to believe in free energy technology to be concerned about the repression of ideas and inventions. I found myself thinking, what better way to justify our dependence on oil, coal, nuclear, and other dangerous and dirty technologies than to claim there are no better, cheaper alternatives? It was my beloved wife and creative partner, Kimberly, who kept bringing me back to the human implications of my scientific research.
For me, as intriguing as the Taurus and ETs and free energy are, the most compelling question was, would understanding these things really help alleviate human suffering in any way? And it turns out it can. So much of the pain on the planet has to do with the lack of access to energy. Can you stay warm? Can you get food and water? Can you get hospital care? All that has to do with energy access. If there is a fundamental pattern, which makes sense to me that evolution would be efficient in that way, and we can align with that pattern to create new technologies that will solve these problems, then it's worth it to me to open my mind to these socially taboo subjects.
If the new energy technologies were to be set free worldwide, the change would be profound. It would affect everybody. It would be applicable everywhere. These technologies are absolutely the most important thing that's happened in the history of the world.
So I agree. Does this mean I'm a crackpot? Does this mean I'm a scam or a fraudster or whatever? I studied science all my life, folks, and I get an idea what's possible and what isn't possible, and I've done a lot of things that pretty much science says not possible, but nonetheless, you try to get that out there into the public, and it seems like you're up against a massive wall. I mean, just a wall of zombies, for one, the people that don't believe it, that everything, they're all skeptic about everything, which maybe understandably they might be skeptic about things because there's so many fraudsters out there that get promoted on YouTube. You know, they shoot these folks whenever they put a video out like this, there's nobody to check and see whether or not these are scams or not, whether they're just like pretty much clickbait, get people to look, because people don't want to pay electric bills. Why should you? I mean, you got solar, you got wind, you got hydro, you got thermal. There's so many different ways to get energy, it's mind-blowing. But nonetheless, if these folks are claiming something and they're making money off of this claim, there's nobody out there to, you know, show otherwise. Now, the video where the guy did the actual replica of one of the devices and it didn't function the way that they said it would, and his explanation of what they could have possibly been doing, you know, folks like that, I can understand that. But folks that just go out and just completely debunk any idea that just because of the terminology free energy, that to me is the wrong thing. Because for every one of these scam artists out there, when I watched their videos, they had to do something in there and, you know, hide a battery. Alright, well, it's pretty creative how they hid the battery, but even in the process of making their scam, there were still some physics available in there that you could potentially throw a little solar or some wind or something there to actually run that same device. You know, and so there was something to learn from even those videos. But for the most part, those videos are nothing more than a hindrance to, you know, what the world said that they needed, clean, renewable, alternative energy. And what benefits? Unlimited benefits as far as I'm concerned. If everyone's out there fighting over oil and resources and complaining about coal and nuclear power, and they claim that they need clean, renewable, alternative energies, green energies, or whatever terminology you want to call it, well, then why such a fight? You know, this is why I say I don't think that the world really wants what it is that they claim they want. You know, most folks think, you know, okay, we get free energy, it's going to collapse the economy. Well, it might collapse the oil industry. It could even collapse the coal industry. You know, but it wouldn't completely collapse the oil industry, because we still make a lot of things out of petroleum products. You know, petroleum. We make plastics, rubber, all kinds of things that are made from petroleum products. So they'll still be in business to some extent. They'll just have to change their business model. Won't be selling as much oil, you know, or if they do, maybe have to change the price of it or something. But nonetheless, even in the power generating industry, you know, they make a lot of money. They make an incredible amount of money, and whenever they are perceived to not be making money, they get government subsidies. They even have government subsidies for supposed alternative energy research, or like if you're going to run solar or wind or whatever. You know, but when you go to actually put it to practice, then you find out there's certain communities that you can't put solar, you can't put wind power, you can't have any home generators or anything like that. Why is that, you know? I mean, they need the tax money from the power company, I'm sure. And so, you know, governments want to ensure that you don't go off the grid. You know, it's beneficial. I knew a small town nearby that their major portion of their income was the fact that the power company had equipment on the town, and they got paid every month for, you know, people in the town that used electricity. And so they obviously wouldn't want free energy in that town. That would take away their income. So common sense dictates that's the reason why that you have such a hard time getting anything going on as far as the, you know, the doggone governmental portion of the deal. Industry, obvious reasons, finances and such. But what about the average Joe, man? You know, why is the average Joe out there trying to make themselves seem more intelligent than they really are, and trying to just go around and insult everyone that they come across that's trying to work on free energy? Because why? Because the MythBuster says it not possible? Why? Because the way that they misunderstand the laws of physics and thermodynamics, that they're not going to be able to do it? Or because somebody put out so many fake devices that they think it's all fake? You know, when you come across something good, like Stan Myers or John Bedini or other ones out there, you can't get it out there. You know, they tried. They made little models of Bedini's motor. You can buy kits still to this very day. And as far as Stan Myers, somebody out there still has the rights to the patents. Somebody out there still has the designs to how he did the injectors and the circuitry and all that kind of stuff. But maybe out of fear, they might not want to put it out there because, you know, they might get harmed as well. So, if the world really has a problem, actions speak louder than words. I'm saying that there must not be a problem. There must not be no energy crisis. There must not be, you know, no major doomsday scenario such as climate change, global warming, or climate disruption, or whatever it's going to be next week when the math don't add up. You know, if there's really a doom and gloom outlook on life, I would say instead of spraying crud into the air, poisoning the environment, that maybe you take a harder look at some of these alternative energy researchers. You know, people out there like to call, you know, guys like me and others who look into this pseudo-scientist, you know, just another degrading way to try to make yourself sound smarter than somebody else. It's all pure ridiculousness, because if you paid attention in science class like I surely have, I know what I'm talking about. Maybe I don't always use the right terminology, and that's one of the things why one of the scientists said about Stan Myers was he's not using the right words. You're not using the right words, so I can't, with my science, understand what it is that you're talking about. I can't put it into perspective. And that's one of the things that I think is a hindrance there, is the communication gap between the so-called educated professors and such and the average Joe. I try to explain things in the simplest terminology so that everyone can understand it, you know, so that you know, when's the last time you heard me try to sell you an alternative or free energy device? You know, I show you concepts. I show you all the ideas out there. I show you what I come up with. I put pieces of the puzzle on the table. But I'm not there trying to sell you a diagram. I'm not trying to, you know, make extraordinary claims that I can't back up. But I'm telling you, folks, the moment I get my lab up and going, the game's going to change. Because I'm going to show a more efficient way, at the very least, on how to do things. And, you know, there's nobody going to be able to shoot you for efficiency. You know, when you go throwing terminology around like over-unity or zero-point or perpetual motion, and you get an actual working device, you get the attention of the wrong dang people. You know, somebody wants to try to do you in. Somebody wants to try to take your doggone research and, you know, try to threaten you into not talking to people, because they call it, a national security risk or whatever, you know. And what's more of a national security risk? Going out there fighting other nations to see who can keep the dollar bill strong or whatever currency you're using? What's more dangerous, going out there fighting with people all the time over pipelines and resources or whatever? There's cases where they've actually even basically stole people's property to force them, for the better of the community, to put something on their land that they didn't want there. You know, they call it, I can't even remember right now, where they take your property and they're supposed to give you just compensation for whatever property. Eminent domain, that's what it is. You know, they use eminent domain to steal your property if they need it for something. So, the system's found a way to quite literally rip you off. And there's also people out there, average Joes out there, who have found a way to quite literally rip you off. lying to you about all kinds of stuff. There's a video that I've been trying to look up here, the Hendershot generator and the explanation. They sell you the plans for this for $93, you know. Looks like a scam to me, but I don't know because I never tried to replicate it. So I'm not going to sit here and say it is a scam, but the way that they're going about it, they're scamming people. Because they'll sell you the diagrams. They won't sell you an actual device. You know, you got to build it yourself. And if you don't build it to exact specs, that it won't work. Well, same thing that Keshi did. Keshi was out there telling everybody that, you know, you do this and you make all this, your wiring in your house turn black, and it'll start producing its own free energy. Well, he scammed a lot of people. There was a whole lot of people that paid him a lot of money and did all this. And to this very day, you still don't hear about the so-called Keshi device out there. Unless it's a scam, then you see people who debunk it or whatever. But either way, he even went as far as to claim he was the Messiah. So they lost a little bit of credibility on that one there. But, you know, the whole dang thing is, there's a lot of scam artists out there. There's a lot of really good devices with potential that if actually did a bit more research, might be just what the doctor ordered, so to speak. That might be just what you're looking for. I looked all over, tried to find the Hendershot. I seen a lot of videos on it, mostly. Some people who believe in it, other people who don't believe in it, and you know, those that oh, it's just mind blowing. There's so much, folks. There's so much out there that it just blows your doors off. And imagine spending all your time researching all these different deals to only find dead ends and scam artists and stuff like that. Finding truth seems to be impossible. It just does. It seems impossible. Because between the government, you know, hey, why would they want you to be self-sufficient? They claim they do. You know, California's supposed to be 0 point by a certain year on all the houses. They're going to make all the people retrofit their houses with alternative energies like wind and solar. You know, whatever. But if this whole carbon thing was really the truth, if it was really as desperate, do you think that there would be no one that would be out there trying to find every single possibility? You know, every single possibility under the sun, you'd look at it. You'd look at it, and you'd start weeding through the scam artist. You know, if these people can't back up what they say, and they're showing people which is flat out, you know, fraud or a lie, why would YouTube keep promoting that? Why would they? You know, they're making money off of advertisement. You know, these folks are getting the clicks, they're getting the views, they got tons and tons of subscribers, and people out there believe a lot of this stuff, and even though it's not real. You know, and so it makes the work that I do and other real researchers do, it makes it hard. It makes it harder and nearly impossible to get, you know, good information out there to people. Now, you know, if I build a device, I'm going to give you the doggone plans. I'm going to give you the opportunity to replicate the doggone thing. That's all I've ever said. If you see something you like, take it, work with it. You know, be one of those free thinkers. See how far you can take it. You know, the whole patent process is a doggone scam. You go to try to patent something, and you're going to pay a lot of money. And then somebody who doesn't even belong to the idea can claim that they do, steal the idea, write it out from under you, argue with you in court, and it takes years and years and years and lots of money and fighting in court just to get a patent on anything. So most generally, most small inventors go broke before they ever even get very far. So why would you want to subject yourself to that? No, I just say, if they really seriously have a problem out there, and I can come up with a solution, and people take it and run with it, then, you know, that's good enough for me. Because, you know, I got grandchildren and children that live in this world, and I want them to live in a better world than the one that I was raised in, and you, and so on. You know? And if there's people out there in this world that are suffering, and they can't get fresh water and food and medicine when they need it, aren't we the people supposed to be taking care of one another? We should be good caretakers of each other. Folks, I'm not trying to scam anyone. I'm not trying to get famous. I'm not trying to get fortune. I'm not trying to, you know, rip nobody off or do anything, you know, underhanded or anything like that. But I have a hard time just getting people to my YouTube channel to start talking to each other about possibilities of things. Now, granted, I've met a lot of people in the time I've done research and all this stuff, and, you know, I've met a lot of quacks as well. But nonetheless, I'm here to hear them all out. I've invited people to the table. I said, come here to Shaziz Radio and let's talk about this, you know. Let's try to find the truth together. Finding the truth seems to be impossible because you got so many people out there with agendas that don't match what they say that their agenda was, to, you know, to make the world a better place. Instead, you know, it's what can I get for myself kind of thing. How can I make everybody think I'm, you know, smarter than I am or whatever, you know. I don't care whether somebody thinks I'm stupid. That's not the point. The point is I don't want people sitting there falsely saying that I'm trying to fraud somebody or steal from somebody. I ain't trying to steal from nobody. I've never asked for anything that I wasn't willing to give back something in return. So, you know, with that said, I'm just doing what I do because I really do care. You know, it's just, if this world is in as bad a shape as that we're told on a regular basis, where are the people? Seriously. Where are the people that want to resolve the issue? Where are the people who want to ensure that no matter what, researchers are protected and the information goes out to the public? Where are those people? Where are the environmentalists? Where are the governments? Where are the people in the corporations who claim that they care? Oh, we're looking for new ways to do stuff. We're looking for cures for cancer. No, they're not. They're not looking for cures for anything, folks. You know, you don't put a child through chemotherapy, radiate this child, and make their hair fall out, kill their immune system, and then completely overlook hyperbaric oxygen treatment, other types of alternative medicines and such. You don't do that unless you got an ulterior motive. You know, and, you know, somebody was talking about donating to St. Jude Hospital, which is supposedly a children's hospital, where the parents don't have to pay no bill. Well, that sounds all well and good, but if they're ignoring every other possible cure out there, and only doing the standard model of chemotherapy and chemo drugs and stuff like that, well, they're just torturing the heck out of those children and collecting money. It's as simple as that. I find it sickening. I find it ridiculous. You know, like I said, I paid attention in science class. I listen to people when they talk about alternatives and what their explanation is of how it functions or whatever. And if it makes logical sense and it meets up to testing and science, and you get people out there that, you know, say, hey, yeah, I tried this and it works, you know, what's wrong with that being out there? What's wrong with that? You know, what's wrong with a doctor who says, take the Hippocratic Oath, who swore to do no harm, putting all options on the table? So when you talk about that and you talk about the energy, you put all options on the table whenever there's a tragedy on the way, right? Well, it don't seem like that. It seems like people just want to shut you down. They want to shut you up. They want to shut you down. They want to do whatever they can to in order to ensure that the system goes on as per usual, you know? Hey, continuity of government, right? National security, right? Well, national security going over there getting in a fight with another nation and making them even madder and sparking off yet even more terrorists, that's really done really good, hasn't it? You know? So there's still people starving in the world after all these years. There's still a so-called energy crisis. You go to the fuel pumps, and the prices keep going up, way up, and then they'll go down for a little bit. They never went back down to the 1970s or 1980s price range. And they'll continue to constantly go up because everyone's under the misnomer that there's a such thing as fossil fuel. You've been told that it was made by dinosaurs, which is a big lie. But nonetheless, you know, I was taught that in science, that dinosaurs made crude oil. You know, never mind the fact that we live in a carbon-based world and there is no such thing as fossil fuel. It's all carbon-based. It's all fuel. Grass clippings, dead fish, dead everything. Anything that's biological and living, even waste products from, whether it be animals or humans, it's all fuel. It's you're never going to run out of it. And combining that with solar, radio technology, wind power, all these different circuit boards that we got out here, all the different transistors, resistive MOSFETs, and so on down the line. If you can't build a self-sustaining device, then you're obviously not trying. You know, and if we take and you start learning how this energy is actually traveling, how it actually functions, you'll forget the terminology. You figure out how it's actually working, and then you monopolize on it. You know, the laws of physics don't have to be a brick wall. They don't have to slow you down. You can use the laws of physics to your advantage. When you learn something, you use it, you know. But that's not what we're seeing. So, finding truth, it seems to be impossible to me. So with that said, I'm going to take a quick break, and I'm going to play this right here.
This is a tale of two very different cities, two remarkable men, and two similar but different inventions that could revolutionize car engines.
What has the French Riviera got in common with Melbourne? They both host Grand Prix, of course, but they also both have companies developing a new kind of engine that runs on pure air. Now, power tools, of course, have run on air power for decades, but no one's been able to turn that technology to cars. Well, there's a French company here in Nice that's done it. Maybe the air car revolution is about to happen.
The cost of feeding the average family's car with fuel is about $60 per week and rising. For a hybrid, the average is about half that. But imagine this, a whole week of driving for only a few dollars. Welcome to the place that could make it all happen. This is the factory of MDI, Motor Development International. It's run by inventor Guy Negro. 15 years ago, this French engineer was designing state-of-the-art Formula One engines. Today, he's leading the race to design the world's first commercial air-driven car. His factory is experimenting with vans, taxis and people movers that could one day go non-stop for an incredible 4,500 kilometres on just one tank of fuel.
Guy Negro's been working on this air car for 10 years. These are just some of the prototypes. And when I say air, it runs on compressed air, of course. The compressed air pushes the pistons in the engine up and down rather than tiny explosions of petrol, like in a conventional engine. But doing that with air is a real challenge. But the reward is you end up with a car whose only emission from the exhaust pipe is clean, breathable air. Of course, the real ingenuity is under here, the engine. Now, it's a four-cylinder piston engine, just like a regular car, but there are significant differences. For a start, that engine weighs less than half of a regular engine. That's because a lot of the components are made of aluminium, Now, the reason they can do that is because there's no combustion. This is driven by air pressure. In fact, you can hold your hand on that engine when it's running and it would just feel warm. So it's well below the melting temperature of aluminium, which means that something like 80% of this engine is made from that lightweight material. So instead of those tiny hot explosions of petrol and oxygen pushing the pistons up and down, like in a normal internal combustion engine, the air engine has compressed air doing the job instead. This is what the air car looks like underneath the seats. There are three compressed air cylinders, cutaway models of them here. Now, the pressure in these things is 300 bar. That's 150 times the pressure you'd pump your car tyres to. So very high pressure environment. And that's why they're made of carbon fibre. If they made these of metal, if you had a car accident, they could explode and send shrapnel everywhere. Whereas the carbon fibre just splits. Now, the chassis itself is made of aluminium. The key to an air car is to keep everything lightweight so you get the best possible mileage. Let's give it a go. Watch out. Hey, it's working. Push button gears for now, but the final version will be automatic.
Keep in mind this is just a prototype, so wheels and drives pretty much like a normal car. Now, when they finally go to market with these cars, they say they'll have a top speed of about 110 kilometres an hour, and you should get about 200 kilometres out of the tanks in the back before you have to refill, which, given it's for city driving, it's pretty good, I'd say.
The car could be refilled from a compressed air service station in just 3 minutes. Or plug it into a power point at home, and the onboard compressor will do the job in 4 hours, for about $2 worth of electricity.
For country driving, they plan to use a hybrid engine, so there'll be petrol or even some biofuel that will help the air. So they should get a much faster car and also one that'll get a lot further.
The hybrid engine would use a small amount of petrol to compress air as you go. And on just one tank of petrol, you could get from Brisbane to Perth or from Los Angeles to New York. How's that for fuel economy? MDI plan to have their first cars on sale in Europe by next year. Engines will be available in 2, 4, and 6 cylinders.
It was during the oil embargo of the United States. It alarmed me that a little country over in the Far East could actually cripple the United States. And realizing that the entire industrial base of the United States and the world is based on the supply and the utilization of energy, it became imperative that we must try to bring in an alternate fuel source and do it very quickly. Of course, I thought originally with the right type of funding, we could possibly get it in within 6 months. But reality shows that the 12 to 15 years was more correct in this projection.
Back in the 70s, Stan Meyer set out single-handedly to solve America's energy problems. He decided to do it using water, the world's most abundant storehouse of hydrogen, which is a far more powerful fuel than oil. For 15 years, Meyer has been fighting to get his inventions taken seriously.
Most inventors have to be a loner. You have to be somewhat thick-skinned. And don't rely on other people to support you, because they will not. More times than not, an invention is really stolen from the inventors. Even in my prior development of high technology, I've had patents taken from me. I learned from the School of Hard Knocks to be very cautious.
Meyer has always stood out against the crowd. He has no formal qualifications as a scientist because he didn't wait to graduate from high school, leaving early to go straight into research at the high-powered Battelle Institute in his native Ohio. Now he works full-time as a private inventor. He's built a device with potentially revolutionary implications. There is nothing startling about a machine that can extract the hydrogen from water. What is highly unusual is that it should do so with ordinary tap water. The conventional method is called electrolysis. Meyer has turned that process on its head. Unlike electrolysis, his device doesn't use up large amounts of electric current, nor does it produce an enormous amount of waste heat. For 20 years, he has been refining a method to fracture water, which produces vast amounts of hydrogen on demand. This is not his latest apparatus. He was unwilling to let us point a camera at that. This is the simple device he used to convince a reluctant patent office that his revolutionary concept actually works. Alloy rods, acting as electrodes, are housed in a press-mix container that's filled with water. Normal mains voltage is fed in through a transformer, but critically, there is virtually no current consumed, less than half an amp. The result is dramatic. Hydrogen pours off with the flick of a switch. Meyer claims the key is his electronics, which pulses electricity rapidly across the rods at up to 20,000 cycles per second. In a way that's not readily apparent, this process transforms the equation. Whereas in conventional electrolysis, three times as much energy is consumed as is produced in the form of hydrogen fuel, in Meyer's apparatus, the reverse is true. It appears to produce several 100% more energy than it consumes.
Stan has something that's characteristic of the people that sound like they've done something to tap zero-point energy. Has high frequency, high voltage, and there's a combination of the two at which something occurs. With Chernetsky in Russia, it was what he called a self-sustaining discharge. The tube would run by itself. When Stan gets this effect, the amount of hydrogen and oxygen that are emitted off these two electrodes is a step function that almost boils the water. If I did this with standard electrochemicals, I need current, and the water should rise a degree every couple of seconds. With Stan's, it'll run for a half hour, and the water temperature hasn't changed. Something's different.
Meyer demonstrates this repeatedly without any difficulty, and yet on the face of it, it represents an extraordinary revolution. His measurements over the years suggest 1,700% greater efficiency than conventional electrolysis. And if he's to be believed, he's getting much better results from his latest, still secret invention.
Well, I first got involved with Stan Meyer when I went over there with a couple of colleagues to look at his water-splitting device. And so we arrived at Stanley Meyer. He had a demonstration cell. We filled it with tap water. In fact, I did that myself. And he switched it on, and almost instantly, the three jaws dropped because of the rate at which the gas poured off. It was quite spectacular.
Whatever energy source Stan Meyer had tapped, it was not explicable by the electric power that was going into it. So something was powering it outside of conventional wisdom.
There is no question that the gas coming off in such abundance is hydrogen. Meyer ignites it to produce a high-temperature flame able to cut through metal.
Stanley Meyer has faced a lot of difficulties. He's three times tried to launch the device and produce press conferences at the technical press round, but these being almost universally slated. In the early days, very much so, they just ridiculed the whole idea. He's getting a little more notice now because some scientists are getting interested. But by and large, science is very intolerant, particularly modern science.
As with Tesla, Griggs and others, Meyer's claims are so far outside the received scientific wisdom that they've been ignored by the majority of the scientific establishment. But then, Meyer has ignored them too. He has poured his energies over the last 10 years into establishing recognition for his claims by getting international patents.
In the processing, there was a great deal of difficulty in trying to process the legal paperwork in such a way as to allow the patent office to fully understand what was actually occurring. In one instant, we brought the water fuel cell to Washington, D.C., and of course I had tweaked it in such a way to produce an enormous amount of hydrogen, oxygen, gas, and the patent examiner said, no, it will not work based on the electrolysis process. And when we turned it on and produced enormous amount of hydrogen and gas, the examiner finally realized that we were doing exactly that, and went out in the hallway and started screaming and hollering to everybody on the floor, put out all your cigarettes, hydrogen's in the building. So we started laughing and said, well, we certainly convinced everybody in the patent office that we can do what we said we can do.
Even so, the U.S. Patent Office dragged their feet for 3 years before granting patents on the hydrogen-producing device. Since then, against massive resistance, he's managed to get patents established throughout Europe and Japan. But the hydrogen machine was only the first step towards Meyer's ultimate dream. If he gets it right, this application of his technology would change the 21st century in the same way that the Wright brothers and Carl Benz transformed the 20th. He is currently modifying a beach buggy to run on nothing but water. It doesn't have a petrol tank or even a hydrogen container. It has just a tank of water. He's invented a device called a water splitter to replace the spark plug. As the water is injected into the engine, Meyer claims it's fractured into hydrogen and oxygen, and then burned as fuel. Meyer is working on a kit to modify any engine. He hopes to demonstrate it on this car within 12 months.
And of course, the blessing to the use of the water as a fuel source, that on combustion, the byproduct is water mist. So we're even solving the environmental pollution problem at the same time that we're using water to maintain the industrial basis of the world.
Meyer is protective about his inventions to the point of self-confessed paranoia. Most observers describe him as a crank and his car as an aberration. But then madness and genius often go hand in hand. Meyer shares with many inventors a problem that goes well beyond paranoia. As an engineer with no scientific background, he faces a giant hurdle when he tries to communicate with scientists.
One problem is that the language that people use when they're trying to describe their inventions is not the language that I as a scientist am used to, and so I have to translate it, if you like, into a way that I can begin to understand what they're trying to say. It might as well be written in Swahili for all of the sense that it initially makes, and so I'm not particularly inspired to put a lot more effort in the hope that the pearl of wisdom will reveal itself.
That ant that stood up to me.
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one ant.
Ooh.
One ant.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one ant.
Yeah, boss. They're puny.
Hmm, puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant. Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this?
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up.
Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life.
It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Aw, crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
I got a laptop. I make music with my friends. I've got a laptop, baby. I make music with my friends. There it is.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Yeah, I can describe the ruckus. Had another crash earlier. Apologize for that. This is a doggone podcast. It happened during the same exact podcast that I played, so there might be something wrong with that particular file. I don't know. Maybe there's something in there the Men in Black don't want people to hear. But nonetheless, back to reality. Finding truth seems impossible. You know, you're listening to the Mad Science Show, by the way. It just... I'm sitting here trying to figure out why it is that the world keeps on saying we got all these issues out there, but nobody ever takes the solutions and runs with them. Now, like I said, I can't wait till I get my new lab up and going, because I'm going to show some pretty cool things, take all the best of what I've learned and put it out there on the table and, you know, see where we go from there. There's always something going on in nature. And if you work, you know, in harmony with nature, nature will work back with you. You know, I don't know what that doggone noise is. It's going to drive me crazy there. Anyway, if you work in harmony with nature, nature's going to work with you just as well. I don't get why it is that all these people keep on talking about the environment is, you know, we got to save the planet and all this kind of stuff, but they never seem to be around in the masses when it comes down to backing up guys like Stan Myers and other researchers out there that do, you know, research into things that could potentially be a solution for the problem. Oh, you know, Big Daddy government's going to get it, right? Wrong. They sure haven't succeeded to this point. They're still telling you got to reduce your carbon footprint. You know, they're still talking about charging carbon tax, higher taxes on fuel. You know, Obama said under my administration, your electric bill will necessarily skyrocket, right? And coal power plants are going to go broke and all that kind of stuff. Well, you know, that sounds really good. You're going to stick it to the average Joe with higher bills and run people out of jobs and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, that's really helpful. And has it solved the problem? It ain't going to solve the problem whenever you've got so-called carbon credits where you can trade them with other companies who's going to pollute anyway. So you got somebody polluting over there. And you're reducing yours, and you got some carbon credits, so you can sell them to them so they can make more crud over there. That's just ridiculous. They basically, created another scam, another way to take more money from the people. It's that simple. Now, when it comes down to crude oil, when we talk about, diesel engine technology, there's all kinds of different biodiesels. There's, different types of, ways that you can run a diesel engine with different types of fuels. And so, I don't see the internal combustion engine going anywhere anytime soon. Matter of fact, if it does stick around, maybe sometime down the line when somebody's got full control over how you use it and what you do with it and all that kind of stuff, well, then you might find incredible efficient machines. But I'm not holding my breath for that one, because I don't think they want efficiency. If they wanted efficiency, we already have every piece of the puzzle necessary to give us all the efficiency we can handle. You know, we could go for, you know, incredible efficiency. Now, if you listen to Mythbusters, over Unity, that's over 100% efficient, you know, and you're getting more out than you're putting in or whatever. Man, who cares? You know? Who cares? If you're getting even 80 to 90% efficient, that's more than the doggone gasoline engine and the diesel engine right now. You only got 30% efficiency on that. Maximum. So, majority of the fuel you're using, you're wasting. So, you know, where are these people? You know, where's all these alternative energy researchers? Where's the dream team? Let's get this dang thing done, man. I posted some video links over there in the chat room. This guy, pretty cool videos. He took a compressor pump, an air conditioner compressor pump, from an automobile, and, you know, repurposed it and made a gasoline or internal combustion engine out of. And then he also took one air compressor out of like a refrigerator and did another one. One's a single cylinder and the other one was a three cylinder. But either way, it shows you there's some brilliance out there. So if you had people like that who know how to build stuff like that, and you had all these different ideas, you could basically try all these different things and shoot for incredible efficiency. We got so much technology right now, folks, it's just mind-blowing. And if it was ever used properly, we wouldn't have any problems. As far as the medical industry pretty much sold their soul to the devil, as far as I'm concerned, just like the fuel industry, the auto industry, every industry out there basically sold their soul to the dang devil. And the dang, science out there, so-called scientists, or college-educated professors, or these supposed brilliant people of the world. Mm-mm. Same thing. They all sold their soul to the devil. That's all there is to it, because we could already had this stuff resolved. We could have already had incredibly efficient equipment. We could already had every house being self-sufficient, everything. Everything from water filtration to how we generate electricity, even to the extent of how we use electricity. How we use gasoline or diesel or any biofuels or anything. We could have these things so incredibly efficient, it'd be mind-blowing. We got capabilities of making precision bearings that, hardly have any friction at all. There's even technology out there to do frictionless bearings. So, with all that said, it's too expensive. If it could be done, it'd already be done, and this and that. You got people who have put videos out there on YouTube talking about free energy and overunity and zero point, basically telling you that the laws of thermodynamics reject it, it's not going to happen, and blah, blah. You go spend that much effort telling you why something can't be done, then you need to sit there and build those devices and show exactly where the flaw is in the system. And if there is a flaw in the system, maybe you can find a solution to that flaw where that thing might actually work. If they spent more time working together as opposed to fighting each other to who's right and who's wrong, we would already had this stuff done. It's as simple as that. And I guess mad science should thank them for it, because as long as the mainstream science is going to be, basically selling itself out to the man, or sold or sold to the devil or whatever, then there's always going to be a need for mad science. So I guess it's like job security for me, man. So what can I say? I'm just trying to put it all in perspective. But if a guy in a garage in some foreign country could take these two devices that I talked about and modify them and build an internal combustion engine out of it, that same kind of guy could probably build the engine that I keep talking about running on pure water, without any kind of electrolyte or anything, using all the laws of physics to your advantage. That when you boil water, what temperature water will boil at. What temperature water will superheat into steam, and so on down the line. So you take all those physics and all the different types of electronic circuitry that we have, the ZVS drivers and stuff like that, you got the technology to heat things rapidly. You got microwave technology that we explained earlier that is incredible. You can cook your food with a radio wave. It's all you're doing. And so if you can get it hot enough to cook it, then imagine what would happen if you got it even hotter and basically shook the water molecule apart. That's what Stan Myers figured out. But where's that technology? Where's it at? It's not the first time water's ever been used as fuel. They don't call it hydrocarbon for nothing. And so there's something to be said. There's water actually in your doggone fuel. As far as, straight up hydrogen technology, there's so many different, the hydrogen fuel cell, its capabilities of producing electricity. They even sell science toys on eBay that you can buy, that you put power to the cell and it'll produce hydrogen and oxygen and separate the two, and then you could turn around and let the pressure built up inside those two chambers run backwards and produce electricity on the opposite side. So the technology's there. It's been there all along. Everybody keep want to talk about, well, you know, it just ain't efficient or whatever, you can't get enough out. Man, I'm so tired of hearing all the negative ridiculousness about, you know, alternative energy that's crazy. The Hendershot generator, I couldn't tell you enough about that thing. Because I never really looked into it, never saw it till just today. And whenever I started looking into it, that's when I found all the scams. All the people trying to sell you blueprints. You know, and they sucker you into this big long video, and you listen to this big long video, and then it talks about cost you $93 to buy the plans, and then you got to build it yourself. So how's that helping anything? There's people out there that believe in the generator. John Searle, the Searle effect. There's people out there researching in on that right there. There's a lot of quacks out there, and there's a lot of people out there just flat out, making fake devices and frauding people, so it makes the real researchers out there look bad. You know, I don't know what to say. You know, it's frustrating, but when you go to trying to find the truth about all these different things, you know, you go in there with a mind like mine, and you can pick out the good and the bad, and you can also you can also find something useful out of even the ones that are faking devices. When it comes down to how it's functioning, the physics of it, and the possibility that if you added a supplementary system like solar or wind or hydroelectrics, that you could get this thing to run itself. You know, the two things in conjunction running each other. So, we got it. It's just a matter of who's going to take it and run with it. That's all I'm asking is that when I get this lab together, everything that I show on this doggone thing, at least try it before you deny it. There's so many people that you wouldn't believe half the comments. I've deleted so many comments off my YouTube channel because it's, people, you know, foul-mouthing and telling you how stupid you are and all that kind of stuff, and it just gets aggravating. It's, you know, they say don't feed the trolls. Well, trolls, I don't know. They don't need no food. They come in there all jacked up and start raising heck with everybody. But you look in free energy. Go out there and take a peek. Spend a day just looking up free energy devices, and you'll find out YouTube's turned into a cesspool of fakery, and you know, so it makes it almost impossible to find the truth about any given device because basically people start looking at you like you're crazy when you start talking about it, you know. And if you don't have the proper terminology, the scientists won't even be able to tell you anything about it. They won't understand it. That's what Stan Myers had against him, was that he didn't use their way of speaking in order to be able to explain to them, you know, or mathematics or whatever that, and they called people like him pseudoscientists. You know, you get a little bit of science to you, but you ain't no scientist. So that's the whole thing. The way that the education system works is basically breeding more people that are just going to continuously attack people like myself. Where are the environmentalists? Who knows? Are they out there protesting? Standing out there on the corner with their wooden stick and their paper sign saying save the trees? That's probably where they're at. Where are all the green energy people? All these people that are supposed representatives, and even, you know, other people out there that are talking all about all this climate change stuff. Where are they? How come they're not here trying to get the solutions to the problem? You know, they want government to do it. They want you to stop driving your car. They want you to stop flying in airplanes. They want you to live in a mud hut and ride around in a rickshaw. But they don't do anything. They never do anything. And 90% of them are all hypocrites because they still ride around in corporate jets. They still ride around in limousines. They still get in there in an SUV or a bus or whatever. And they're still using plastics and all kinds of other stuff. So they're not doing anything. They're not doing anything. All they're doing is running around complaining and scaring children and saying that the world is doomed. That's it. That's it in a nutshell. So I'm asking, where are these people? When are they going to get their act together? When are they going to, do something to resolve the problem? When are they going to start backing the researchers, the real researchers out there? And I ain't talking about the scientists, and I'm definitely not talking about the sellouts that they call the Mythbusters. Those folks, as far as I'm concerned, have lost all credibility. You know, they're supposed to be real smart people. You're going to show you the truth about things. And the hack job that they did on hydrogen technology and Bedini and other people that, you know, who cares if they don't believe in free energy, you know? But to sit there and try to tell the world that there ain't no such thing as free energy is just intellectually dishonest. It's quite literally stupid. And it makes them look stupid as well. So I challenge the Mythbusters.
Yeah.
I challenge them. Come on, let's talk about this thing. Let's have a debate on it. Let's try to figure this out. You say there's problems. You say that the mainstream scientists, oh, the majority of the scientists say, no, they don't. And the ones who do are just trying to keep their funding. But regardless, you say that that's a problem. Let's get our act together. Let's take the most brilliant minds and let's find the solution. That's what I'm saying. Because that's what I've been working on. That's my only purpose for being here on the Mad Science Show, is to sit here and tell the truth about things. And, you know, like I said, finding the truth seems to be impossible. You can find it. It's out there. But, you know, if you're going to try to deal with it in the same fashion that everybody else deals with it and, you know, just believe whatever the white coat tells you, well, you're going to be in the same predicament now that you have been in for years with the system still being in charge and the man charging you taxes on everything, including water and next the air you breathe. So you're going to have to pay carbon taxes just to breathe, man. Never mind what science says. And so, I guess mad science has job security, right? Well, anyway, I'm going to take a breather. I'm going to throw on a tune, and then I'll come back. So, stay tuned. You're listening to Mad Science.
Yeah, it was just one ant.
Ooh, one ant.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one ant.
Yeah, boss, they're puny.
Hmm, puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this?
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up.
Those puny little ants outnumber us 100-1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life.
It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Give me the number for 911.
Yeah, give me the number for 911 too. So, I'm actually subscribed to this one particular channel, but I'm going to play this even though I don't agree with a lot of the points made in it. Some of them I do, but either way, listen in on this for a bit.
Hey, 42 here. This is Hornsey Project 1, a wind farm currently under construction off the coast of Yorkshire. When it is completed in 2020, it will be the largest wind farm in the world. It will power 1 million homes, but this project will collectively cost consumers in the UK an additional £4.2 billion on their energy bills. That's fine, I guess, if it's going to save the planet. But is it? Really? It turns out that renewable energy isn't as rosy as we have all been sold. 97% of scientists believe that climate change is real and it's an issue we need to face today. It's estimated that the effects of climate change will kill at least 150 million people this century. All of these premature deaths could be avoided if the average global temperature could just be reduced by 1.5 degrees Celsius.
Alright, so I'll pause that there. You know, there's a couple things in there. I want to talk about the wind turbines or, you know, whatever, killing off birds and stuff like that. We'll put a screen around them, then you ain't got that issue anymore. But nonetheless, you know, you talk about the number of people that talk about climate change going to be killing off and all that kind of stuff. If we got that kind of problem, then why is there so much effort put into not looking into alternatives? That's the question. You know, is all these carbon taxes going to help out? According to what they say, no, it is not. And as far as the way that things are engineered, if they're karate chopping birds and bats out of the sky, you know, then, use a little bit of science and some common sense and fix it so that it can't. Anyway, let's just keep going.
Professional hippies spend their lives doing two things: dyeing their hair and getting angry at governments for their apparent lack of action on climate change. There are a very small number of countries, however, that have heard the message loud and clear and are leading the way on fixing the planet's thermostat by investing billions into renewable energy. The most prominent is Germany. Today, between 40 to 50% of Germany's energy comes from renewables such as wind, solar and hydro. Germany, then, is making an exemplary move in the right direction, aren't they? Well, let's take a closer look at Germany's most popular renewable choice, wind power. Wind turbines are fantastic for reducing CO2 emissions, we all know that. Building wind turbines, on the other hand, does actually produce a huge amount of CO2 to smelt and manufacture the humongous steel bodies and aluminium blades. But once it's up and running, a wind turbine pays off its CO2 debt within 5 months, so it's not really an issue. No. The issue is that a low carbon footprint is just about the only benefit of wind turbines. They kill endangered species of birds quicker than the Duke of Wellington on New Year's Day. Hundreds of thousands of birds are killed by wind turbines every year, and thousands of those are rare species of large birds like eagles. Over 1 million bats are also killed each year by wind turbine blades, and solar has its own unique issues, mainly toxic waste. Well-made solar panels have a lifespan of 20 to 25 years. But with their huge and growing popularity, cheaply made Chinese solar panels are flooding global markets. These can break down in as little as 5 years, and many of them contain highly toxic chemicals that are harmful to human health and can cause cancer, such as lead, cadmium, and chromium. Unlike nuclear waste, toxicity of these elements never decays. All solar panels can break, and do so with varying degrees of regularity. When the glass is smashed, toxic chemicals can leach into the soil and thus public water supplies. Also, we have no plan to dispose of these mountains of broken solar panels safely. The vast majority of solar panels will be shipped off to countries that have no safe way of dealing with their toxicity. Countries where we already send millions of tons of our tech waste each year, such as Africa and other developing regions. These are teething issues that will hopefully be fixed by better decommissioning protocols and pipelines and improved solar technology. Both solar and wind, however, have an inescapable issue that no amount of technology can fix. They only produce energy when the wind blows or the sun shines. In some locations, that's as little as 10% of the time. And yes, we've built wind farms in those locations. Even the most efficient wind and solar farms only work optimally 30% of the time, although to be clear, most solar and wind farms produce some amount of energy around 75% of the time, even if it is just a little. This means we will always need a more consistent energy source, such as fossil or nuclear, to cover renewables downtimes. Perhaps in the future, battery technology will reach a point where it becomes feasible to store copious amounts of excess power from renewable sources, and then the grid can be fed off those whilst the wind isn't blowing and the sun isn't shining. But currently, the technology isn't even close. As it stands, no battery array in the world can hold even a fraction of the power needed to sustain a city for more than a few minutes. The current largest array, built by Tesla in Australia, is a 100 megawatt array that can sustain 30,000 homes for an hour. In fact, without having huge and expensive battery arrays dotted around every country, which would be an eyesore, solar and wind have seemingly insurmountable redundancy issues. Fossil and nuclear power plants both work within a similar framework. The fuel produces heat, which is used to create steam, which turns a large turbine, which turns a generator, which creates electricity. And when I say large turbine, I mean stupidly large. These Goliaths usually weigh in at over 100 tons of solid steel. Its immense mass has some benefits, primarily redundancy. Nuclear power plants produce energy 24/7, 365 days of the year. They are only shut down once every 2 years to refuel. But what if it has to shut down in an emergency? What if it fails and stops producing steam to turn the turbine? Actually, what if every single fossil fuel and nuclear power plant in the country all shut down at the same time for some reason? the power would go out, right? Well, not quite. You see, because of the immense inertial mass of a spinning turbine, there is enough centrifugal force to maintain its rotation and continue to generate power as normal for a couple of minutes without any steam input. This gives the national grid a small yet crucial time to restart the power plant and get it back online. Because of this crucial redundancy window, unplanned power outages due to hiccups at power plants are extremely rare. Most power cuts happen due to weather affecting other parts of the infrastructure, such as overhead cables. Wind turbines don't have a large turbine to rely on if it fails. It just stops producing power instantaneously. So does a solar farm. Although there is currently hype surrounding new hybrid wind turbines that have a backup battery in the base of the tower, which will help overcome this issue somewhat. But then there's an issue of land usage and the environment. To build these huge arrays of wind turbines and solar panels, an area of over 5,000 square meters usually has to be cleared of all vegetation and wildlife. This is disastrous for the ecosystem, the local environment, and the poor various species that may call it home. To power a country such as the United Kingdom, using exclusively wind and solar power, it is estimated that up to 25% of the country's land surface would have to be cleared and transformed into wind or solar farms. Wind farms only return 2.5 watts per square meter. Compare that to nuclear, which produces 1,000 watts per square meter, and it's clear how inefficient renewables are when it comes to land usage. We could mitigate some of this disastrous loss of nature by building all of these wind farms offshore, although we still don't fully understand the long-term effects of offshore wind farms on marine species. But this isn't actually the plan. Sure, we're building offshore wind farms, but the UK currently has 271 farms planned over the next decade. About half of them are currently under construction. But only 25 of these will be offshore. Although it's worth considering that the offshore arrays do tend to be far larger than their land counterparts. There's an important philosophical question to be answered here, though. By destroying huge swathes of nature to build renewables, aren't we destroying the very natural world that renewables are intended to save? But what about the cost of human life caused by direct accidents, such as reactor meltdowns? Surely this is one area in which renewables can win, hands down. Well, the figures may shock you, as they shocked me. The most dangerous are, as to be expected, the fossil fuels. Coal tops the figures with 100,000 deaths per petawatt hour. Then oil at 36,000, then biomass with 24,000 deaths, natural gas at 4,000. And that's not factoring in the millions of deaths each year as a result of the air pollution from all of these sources. But it's the carbon neutral energy sources that have the most interesting figures. Hydro, 1,400. Also, hydro secretly produces quite a large amount of CO2. Solar, 440 deaths. And wind, 150. Although, there are no completely reliable data sources for wind turbine deaths. More data is needed here. It's what's at the very bottom of the list, however, that may shock you. Nuclear is just 90 deaths per petawatt hour. And that includes Chernobyl, Fukushima, and Three Mile Island. Nuclear energy has a really bad public image. It's no surprise, with its association with nuclear warheads and Chernobyl. But you can't ignore statistics. And it is statistically the safest form of reliable power production we have today. Nuclear energy and negative press go together like Greenpeace and propaganda. And so there are many countries that have been decommissioning nuclear reactors in favour of renewable sources. But in an ironic twist of fate, nuclear may just be the energy source that could save our planet. Nuclear fission is big and scary, but it has so many benefits that cannot simply be ignored. Nuclear power plants produce zero carbon emissions. Their only byproduct is nuclear waste. But unlike byproducts of all the other forms of energy production, this is 100% contained and doesn't leak out into the environment. Nuclear waste can also be recycled and reused in reactors multiple times. It's important to note, however, that the uranium mining and enrichment processes do use fossil fuels, and this does produce a lot of CO2. But when we average it out over a power plant's life cycle, A single nuclear reactor and all its related industries produces a median of 65 grams of CO2 per kilowatt hour. That's roughly the same amount of CO2 produced by wind farms over their life cycle, taking their manufacturing and regular maintenance into consideration as well. But nuclear's carbon footprint could be even lower than wind. Allow me to expand. Since 1987, Russia and the US have been mutually decommissioning their nuclear warheads. Even if recent political hiccups have put a spanner in the process, every year old nuclear warheads are still regularly retired and decommissioned. This creates a steady influx of already highly enriched uranium fuel that can be used in nuclear power plants to create energy, completely bypassing the uranium mining and enrichment processes, and thus bypassing CO2 emissions altogether. Skeptics believe that nuclear power plants lead to nuclear weapon proliferation. But, in fact, it's the complete opposite. The absolute best way to reduce the number of nuclear weapons in the world is by building more nuclear reactors. In 2013, 19% of the world's nuclear energy needs were fueled by uranium-235 from decommissioned nuclear weapons. Let's take a look at two real-life countries that have taken completely opposite paths when it comes to energy. Germany has invested heavily into renewables and has decommissioned 17 of their nuclear reactors, and Merkel's government pledged to remove all of their nuclear reactors by 2022. So today, only 6% of Germany's power comes from nuclear. At the opposite end of the scale, France has invested heavily in nuclear as its primary source of power. They currently have 58 active reactors, and more than 80% of France's energy needs are met by nuclear. By far the highest per capita in the world. The result? Germany's CO2 emissions per capita are double that of France. And French households enjoy a much lower energy cost as well. They pay only €0.1799 per kilowatt hour. Germans pay almost double that for their electricity, €0.3 per kilowatt hour. The second highest in Europe. Notably, Germany's energy costs have increased by 50% since starting their big push towards renewables. I'm not trying to actively disparage renewables. I think they have an important part to play in saving the planet. But I believe it should be a far smaller part than what we are currently aiming for, if for no other reason than to not see our world's beautiful landscapes littered with gigantic obnoxious windmills, not if there is no overwhelming benefit over the alternative. Humanity's cleanest, cheapest form of energy has been right in front of us since the 40s, and until nuclear fusion comes along, we should be investing more in nuclear fission to prevent greenhouse gases without needing to destroy thousands of square miles of our beautiful planet to litter it with bird blenders. But what if nuclear energy could be improved even further? What if it could produce little to no waste and be completely safe and meltdown-proof? Well, maybe it can. In 1950, Indian physicist Homi Bhabha postulated that perhaps another fuel from the typical uranium-235 and plutonium-239 could be used for nuclear fission. Thorium. Thorium is a naturally occurring radioactive metal that is four times as abundant on Earth as uranium. After World War II, a reactor design that used thorium as its fuel, a molten salt reactor, was created by the US government. And the first experimental reactor of its kind was built at Oak Ridge National Laboratory. And it successfully generated electricity between 1965 and 1969. But the US government decided that the future of nuclear energy was in uranium, not thorium. And so pretty much every reactor in the world since the 60s has used uranium fuel. There were many reasons for uranium being chosen as the de facto fission fuel over thorium. But one of the most prominent was that uranium makes much better bombs. Uranium enrichment plants produce highly enriched uranium that can either be used in nuclear warheads or to power people's homes. Thorium, on the other hand, can be used to make nuclear weapons, but it's a lot more difficult and more inefficient. But that's not the only benefit of thorium-based power over uranium. Thorium reactors produce much less nuclear waste. One Chinese scientist claims that there will be 1,000 times less nuclear waste from thorium reactors. Also, since natural thorium can be used directly as a fuel, it does not need to be enriched. And it gets better. Another thorium reactor design, known as Liquid Fluoride Thorium Reactor, or LIFTR, has a unique design that its proponents claim is meltdown-proof. You see, the most common cause of reactor meltdowns in current uranium plants is excessively high and runaway temperatures, usually due to power failures which can lead to insufficient cooling. But LIFTRs contain a plug at the bottom of the reactor that is designed to melt if the temperature gets too high. This causes all the fuel to drain into an underground safe storage tank, which, in theory, should completely avert a catastrophic meltdown. It all seems too good to be true, and science writer Richard Martin certainly thinks so. He writes, "Thorium could provide a clean and effectively limitless source of power while allaying all public concern, weapons proliferation, radioactive pollution, toxic waste, and fuel that is both costly and complicated to process." But, like everything in life, thorium isn't short of its detractors. There are some who argue that because thorium is still highly experimental and it hasn't been operational on a large scale like uranium reactors have, it can't yet be trusted, and it may not be all it's being made out to be. But I guess the only way we can find out for certain whether thorium is the golden goose of clean energy is by putting it into use. And that's exactly what India is doing right now. India has one of the largest natural supplies of thorium, and they have pledged to meet 30% of their energy demands with thorium reactors by 2050. Britain, France, Canada, America, China, and a few others are currently looking into thorium as a potential energy source, but India is currently the only country that has a well-thought-out, government-approved and funded plan to ramp up thorium-based energy production. India plans to have over 60 functional thorium reactors by 2025. And since India is the world's third largest polluter, it seems like a necessary step that could help preserve the planet for a little while longer. But it's going to require action from more than just one country to save our planet. To be completely honest, the world needs to look towards China to stop burning dinosaurs for fun. Just under 30% of the world's carbon emissions come from China. It's not surprising, since a staggering 55% of power production in China is coal-based. A tiny 4% of China's power comes from nuclear, as of 2018. I'm not saying we should abandon all forms of energy except nuclear. Wind and solar renewables have a huge and beneficial part to play in saving the planet. But all nations should be looking to eradicating coal-based energy production. It's horrendously inefficient. You have to burn a load of coal and release a ton of CO2 for a pathetic return of energy. It kills millions of people each year from pollution, and it's quickly killing the planet too. But perhaps as most developed nations are looking to replace coal power, nuclear shouldn't simply be swept aside for renewables. Renewables may be the fashionable and popular option, but that doesn't necessarily make it the better option. Thanks for watching. I've recently launched my first book with...
Alright, so you heard a lot of different stuff on there. He sounds like he's pretty well advocating for nuclear power, which, you know, I ain't got no fears of nuclear power. And pros and cons to everything out there, but once again, you know, if people aren't really on board with becoming individually self-sustained or whatever, if you're relying on governments like China or whatever, you know, there must not be a problem that they keep saying. They keep saying that, you know, we got like 12 years before the planet's doomed or whatever. All right, well, if that's the truth, then why aren't we looking into every single option? And, you know, why all these people are out there protesting, you know, the coal industry or what they like to call fossil fuels or even the nuclear power industry, they could be focusing their efforts into getting behind people who are actually doing real research and find a solution to the problem. And to, the solution may be as ridiculously simple as, you know, basically becoming incredibly efficient, re-engineering a few things to make them work better, where your gasoline engine, it's getting a perfect burn every time, or even if you're burning coal, you with all that black soot that's coming out of those coal-fired power plants, you could refocus that exhaust and run a second coal-fired power plant. If you think I'm crazy, go look into the rocket stove, and you'll see how the rocket stove actually takes the exhaust and reburns it. You could run a second power plant with the emissions of the first power plant, and keep doing that down the line until you got one that, you know, just won't run. There ain't enough fuel left over from that exhaust. But even at that, if you was going to capture, if you captured that exhaust and reuse that fuel, you know, you're making it more efficient. So, it doesn't matter whether you're using, you know, nuclear or wind power or solar power or whatever, you know, coal fired, hydroelectrics or anything. It's about how we're actually using energy to begin with is the big problem. But I don't see anyone out there talking about that. I don't see any major environmentalist groups out there actively seeking real solutions to the problem, and you definitely don't see any governments doing it. You know, if you look at some of these videos and you see half of the doggone garbage that's in India or, you know, different what they like to classify as third world countries. I don't like that terminology. It seems degrading, but basically I think we all should be first world countries. I think that if we can have electricity and fresh water and medicine and stuff here, that every nation should be able to have access to that as well. But it's not the governments of the world that's going to do it. It's not the corporations of the world that's going to do it. It's the average Joes that's going to do it. The average Joe's figuring out ways to become incredibly efficient, and, you know, even to the extent of the work research that I'm doing, where I'm showing, you know, a different way to build things, a different way to use power. And if you're using your power more efficiently, that means you only got to make less power. And as far as storage, you know, if every single home out there was part of the storage, then you would have plenty of energy even when the sun wasn't shining. And as far as the solar and wind, if you had an interconnected grid that would went worldwide, whatever power you're not using over here, you could ship over there. You could have a smart grid system that would literally move power around where it's needed. So it's only a matter of cooperation, and it's only a matter of common sense. You know, it's like I said with the wind turbines, common sense dictates if you're knocking birds out of the sky with the doggone wind turbine blade or whatever, then maybe you put something around it that the bird can't go into that blade, you know, put a grid around it, a fence, like they did on oscillating fans, you know. Back in the old days, they used to have fans with an open face, and if you stuck your finger in, you're liable to lose your finger. You know, they had brass blades on there, so it was like a spinning knife, so they were dangerous as all get out back in the day. Until somebody got wise and put a doggone screen across the front of it so nobody could put their fingers in it. You know, but what do you get, man? How do you get all the people of the world to begin to work together? How do you get the average Joe to, and the average Jane for that matter, how do you get them to the table? How do you get this podcast out to all these different people who believe in alternative energy and want to save the planet, so to speak? Where are these people? Where are the government representatives? You know, when we're sitting around having a logical conversation backed by science and explaining to people all the possibilities and solutions, where are the people out there who's doing all the complaining? That's the big thing. They're sure not here. You know, neutrons, protons, electrons said question for you, Shaz. I've often heard you say doesn't come from dinosaurs, which we were all taught. So what is oil's origins? Well, that's an easy explanation. You've heard of biofuels, such as turning any type of like hemp seed oil. You can run a diesel engine straight off of hemp seed oil. Everything out there has oil in it. Fish, you got oil in it. Duckweed, watermill, grass clippings, leaves, any nuts out there. You can take all this. All it is heat and pressure. It's all the same exact chemistry that makes up what they classify as fossil fuel. You can make the crude oil in a lab in a matter of, you know, hour or two. It's no big deal. Heat and pressure. You take that, any of these things, like I said, duckweed or watermill, you can gasify them. You can use heat and pressure to literally extract oils from them. Think about the essential oil market out there. How many different oils that we're talking about? You know, you're cooking your food in oils. It's all the same exact thing. Because of the way that crude oil has all the different types of chemistry, there's certain things that would be in crude oil that wouldn't be in biodiesels or whatever, like some toxins or other gases or whatever. But nonetheless, you think about it. Think about this logically. Your methane from your septic tank, there's a specific method for making propane, which is a little bit more technical than actual methane. Methane's made naturally. Even CO2 can be used as fuel. It doesn't matter. There's just so many different ways to get oil. It's mind-blowing. Heck, there's a tree that they call hedge over here. They call it Missouri orange. Big old giant hedge apples is what they call them. Some call them hedge balls, whatever. They have oil in them. They also have citric acid in them. If you cook those things, you can make crude oil. You can make crude oil out of or fuel out of old plastic, you know, because it's all petroleum products. You know, they say the dinosaur fuel because it sounds like, well, okay, that's rare. It's hard to come by. You know, there was only so many dinosaurs. We're eventually going to run out. But there's no physical possible way that we will ever, ever run out of what they call crude oil. As long as the Earth keeps doing what it has been doing, the chemistry, everything. You think about like leaves that fall out of trees and they get down underneath the pond and they start to rot. Well, that rot builds up not just CO2, but it also builds up methane and it gets this black substance up underneath the pond. And there's actually a deal out there where ponds will literally roll over. They'll build up a pocket of gas up underneath there, and the pond, all the mud will basically bubble up to the top, and all the CO2 and methane will be released, and it will suffocate all the fish inside there. It's not any new. Neutron said, yep, for the amount of oil that's already been used, and the amount of unused and untapped oil there would have to be like, he's got the 7 and a whole bunch of zeros, dinosaurs at the time. So its perpetual process is essentially what ye are saying. Yeah, it don't stop. When fish die or animals die, plants, trees, it don't matter. Anything carbon-based, biological, when it dies, it has the same chemical process that made the crude oil. it, you know, it gets down in, it gets pressurized, it gets heated, and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And once you know how it's actually made to begin with, you take the same chemistry and you can replicate it in a lab. So there's no way that you could ever, ever, ever run out of crude oil. They keep on saying this over and over again, and it's mind-blowing. Do you realize how many car tires there are out there? Do you realize how many plastic bottles, how many plastic chairs, how much plastic is in automobiles? It's just mind-blowing. We got more plastic out there than you could possibly imagine. They say this stuff will stay in the dumps for years, but it could also be recycled, reverse engineered back into more fuel again. And so with that said, well, you understand the chemistry and the physics of what's going on, and then you turn around and re-engineer these engines to be more efficient. I can sit there and tell you in graphic detail exactly what's wrong with the internal combustion engine and why it's so inefficient. You're wasting most of the energy and heat alone. Imagine, you only need the doggone temperature of that cylinder. That's all you need. You need the heat only in one place of that engine, yet we got it all throughout that engine. You could turn that heat into extra energy and make that car so incredibly efficient that it's mind-blowing. As far as energy storage, we've already got energy storage. We got capacitor technology beyond all belief. We've got new battery technologies. We've got every single piece of the puzzle necessary to resolve the so-called problem. But you know, for whatever reason, you can't get everyone on board. The mainstream scientists, the environmentalists, the people who are out there crying wolf, saying we're all going to die, we're all going to die, the sky's falling. They're running around like Chicken Little and, you know, the boy who cried wolf hollering about doomsday. And I'm sitting there telling everybody, hey, look, if you paid attention in science class, we've got this resolved. All you got to do is come together and do it. You know, what's the problem? You know, finding the truth seems to be impossible because it seems like, you know, very few people can actually find the truth. I know the truth. I paid attention in science class. And so I'm shooting for incredible efficiency. And when I accomplish that, that's when everybody will realize that energy is free. It's not about the fact that we don't have energy, overabundance of energy. We got more energy than we can use in a trillion lifetimes, but the way that we use it is flawed. It's inefficient. It doesn't. It causes damage. And the way that they design things, they have a term called planned obsolescence. Things have to fail. Your light bulb has to burn out, otherwise they can't sell you a new light bulb. You have to use up as much fuel as possible, otherwise they can't sell you the fuel. And whenever everybody's driving all these cars and everything, they're living high on the hog, they're charging you an astronomical amount, they're putting a little bit of additives to the fuel to basically give you more in your gas tank. But if you noticed anything about the fuel these days, the fuel, the way that they mix it, a majority of it will evaporate faster, and they're putting ethanol inside with gasoline, you know, and, you know, basically, diluting the fuel, but it still burns. It doesn't matter. It'll still burn. But you can make these engines so incredibly efficient just by a few modifications that you get more miles per gallon than you do the way that it's set up right now. It's mind blowing because if I'm smart enough to understand all this kind of stuff, then I'm sure that I'm not the smartest man on the planet. And so with that said, there has to be other people out there just like me who get it. For whatever reason, they don't come to the front and say, hey, you know, what are we doing here? You said we're doomed, and you're not doing anything about it. Paying the tax isn't going to fix it. You know, industry ain't going to fix it. Governments aren't going to fix it. If you, the people, believe there is a problem, If you bought the lie of climate change and global warming and climate disruption, then why aren't you at the table? Where are these people? I've been throwing down the gauntlet for years. I've been challenging any science guys. I've been challenging any so-called environmentalists. I've been challenging government officials. I've sent letters in every dang direction under the sun. And most generally, it probably ends up in file number 9, you know, a.k.a. the old trash receptacle. Nobody pays attention. So why wouldn't I be mad? Why wouldn't mad science have a reason, a justification for being upset? Because they don't care. If they really cared, they would listen. But every time you start talking, they will cherry pick your words. They'll find whatever that it is that they don't like about what you're trying to explain to them. They'll try to use the laws of physics to say you're stupid. And that's not possible. It's not possible is what they say. If it was possible, we'd already be doing it. That's what they say. No, you wouldn't already be doing it. Because if you would already be doing it, we wouldn't be having this conversation. That's the thing. But I'm going to have to keep on having this conversation. I have to keep on talking until I'm blue in the face, apparently. You know? And I don't get it. It's like the 100 monkey syndrome or something. You know, you could have all the good ideas in the world, but if you can't get those ideas to the doggone table and have people start building things and working on things, try it before you deny it. I say that you can build an engine that will run on pure water. Flat out, pure water, with absolutely no additive to that water. Water is hydrogen and oxygen, if you understand the physics of it. Obviously, a liquid cannot be compressed, but once you get that up to a certain temperature, it's no longer liquid, it actually becomes a gas. And at certain other temperatures, it will literally separate, you know, the molecule. How do you think evaporation occurs? I mean, for Pete's sake, folks, I can't be the only one with these ideas in my head. And I'm trying, now I'm really honestly trying to get the truth out there to the world. I'm up against a beast of epic proportions, apparently, because I can't get people to the website. You know, I get a lot of views on the website. There's traffic there, you know, but where are the people in the chat rooms? Where are they at? You know, where's the response? Why is it, I say I got 8,700 some odd subscribers on my YouTube channel, but my video views are ridiculously low. You know? So, when I get this new lab up, and it's hopefully be soon, within the next couple months, I'm funding it all myself. And so, it's a money issue at the point. I gotta get some more materials to finish it up, plus shelving and stuff like that. And then I gotta move everything physically from this room that I'm in right now, and my old lab that I can salvage from the flood there. And get it in there and start doing radio and live streams from that and showing everybody exactly what I've been trying to point out all along. You know, if we had cooperation around this world, if we had other researchers that were on board with it, I wouldn't even be opposed to those researchers coming here and working with me. But you don't see that kind of cooperation. You know, they spend millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars, sending money to the UN Climate Change Fund, you know? And what have they accomplished? We're still hearing about it. So, you know, I don't get it. Yeah, Neutron, Proton, Electron said we got over 11,000 members of People for People. Where are they? That's what I'm asking, brother. Where are all these people? It doesn't make any sense. If we really have these problems, if we're doomed, and we've got 12 years to sort it out, or less than by now, who knows how long that number's been out there, where are all these people? Where are the 8,700 subscribers that I have on YouTube? Where are they at? You know? I get a few that come around a lot. Why ain't they in these chat rooms? Why ain't they talking to me on the science deal? Why aren't we getting together and collaborating, doing videos and projects together? What's taking so long? You know, is this all, you know, there's a story about this lady making a cake, you know, and nobody wanted to help out. Nobody wanted to pitch in or anything. They just waited and waited and waited patiently, and when she finally got the cake done, well, they were all willing to eat it, but they weren't never willing to pitch in. And this is the whole thing. Why does it all got to be on one person's back? Why can't it be a group effort and we all succeed together? That's what the whole dream team was all about, you know? Put the dream team together, bring the most brilliant minds together, and solve all these world problems. I keep saying, and I keep asking, I keep throwing my hat in a ring, say, hey, let's get together, let's talk about this. Neutrons, protons, electrons said the world must be fine, Shaz, and it's just us that's mad. I'm starting to believe you're right. I'm starting to believe that myself. You know, I'm just, Chris says don't get tied up in the numbers, easier said than done. I get it. I'm not trying to get tied up in the numbers. It's not about the notoriety of the 8,700 some odd subscribers that I got. That's not the issue here. But when you talk about this for years, and it has been years, you can go back and look at the podcast, look at the dates, look at the videos. When you talk about all this for years and you ask questions and try to open the dialogue and you still can't get it. Now, imagine what I could have done with the type of money that they give to the United Nations. The government gave that kind of money to the United Nations. Imagine what I could have done with a couple $1 million or more. You know, and it was a lot more than that they gave to the United Nations Climate Change Fund. And that don't even scratch the surface. You know, but imagine what a guy like me and a team of people who didn't close our minds to possibilities or close our minds to physics and science, that we used all this to our advantage and made, I'm telling you, the right team together in less than 30 days could have an engine that would run on pure distilled water, without a doubt. No ifs, ands, or buts. All the physics is there, all the science is there, and protons, neutrons, electrons, neutrons, protons, electrons says, yep, remember the mad science show 10 years ago. I've been at it, folks. And I'm a man of my word. I hadn't gave up. I'm just trying to share some things with people. It'd be a lot easier to share things with people if people would help share things otherwise. You know, send the podcast out. Tell people what's going on, you know. Talk about it. Heck, I even made me up a t-shirt and I wear that thing around. I'll try to find a link to the t-shirt and throw it up there in the chat room. If you want to help me out, make a copy of this t-shirt, you know. I don't have the money to go around and buy everybody a t-shirt. I'm not even trying to get out there and sell t-shirts or anything like that. It's just some way to get the message. Make a poster or you know, write it on a wall or something like that, you know? I'm just trying to figure this all out because, you know, I'm 54 years old, which might not be old to some people, but, you know, I'm feeling my age. And I'm not always going to be around. But I'd like to at least accomplish this task before it's all said and done. I'd like to, you know, heck, if I could go talk to the Congress or the Senate, or, you know, government. I'd even sit in there and talk to them, explain to them everything I said. You know, I might overwhelm their brains. They'd probably, eyes roll back in their heads. Some of them be snoring. Some of them really don't even care to even hear it. But if, you know, truth be known, and the real science is there, If all these other things are dangerous and you know, toxic, then what do they got? What is the problem with at least hearing me out. That's all I'm saying. I'm going to post this over there into the People for People chat room and paste that there. All right. Yolanda said, can we buy shirts? I don't make them. You know? But there's if you click on that link that I just put in the People for People and the Super chat room, you can go out and have one made for yourself and basically be able to shop around and get the best bargain so that you can get it as cheap as possible, you know, and wear it around. Help me try to get some traffic over here or something like that. You know, I do have AdSense ads on the website, so every time somebody comes here, it throws a few pennies in the bucket. But when I say a few pennies, I mean quite literally a few pennies. So it's not necessarily profitable for what I'm doing. I spend more money per month doing this radio show than it actually benefits me. But I believe in the cause so much that I do it. Yolant said, I can't even hardly go to my writing class anymore. People spouting the media propaganda, they are so brainwashed, they can't entertain hardly anything outside of the media. I get that too. Believe me, I get that. But if you got that shirt on, this shirt was designed to basically open the dialogue, you know, get somebody talking. It's that simple. It was to say, hey, yeah, okay, why is mad science the key to truth about free energy? You know? And then I could start telling them all the things I've been telling you. Or you could simply share your favorite podcast with them. Folks, anything you can do to help me get the traffic out here would be awesome. You know, I put a donation link on my my website, but I don't advertise that. If somebody really wanted to find that, they gotta look for it to find it. I don't, you know. And if you don't believe in a project or something I'm doing, I don't want you to do that. You know, I'm just saying. But there's not enough people getting involved in this entire thing in order to, you know, solve a world issue. I mean, I could do this. I love doing the Mad Science Show. You know, I love talking to people. I love sharing ideas. I love thinking outside the box. And it angers me that the mainstream media and the propaganda and the science community and all the way that the people are abused in this world, and it's all because of energy as far as I'm concerned. Wouldn't be all these doggone wars without all this. But, you know, I believe in what I do. That's why I do what I do. And so, you know, with that said, you know, mad science is the key to truth about free energy. And I said it. Ask me why. I tell people all the time, I wear this shirt everywhere I go. Everywhere I go in public, I wear this shirt. Some people come up and they take a picture of my shirt and, you know, they say they're going to look at it later, and maybe they show up. If you happen to see my shirt out there, throw a message in the chat room. Hey, yeah, I saw you wearing that shirt, you know. And I'll tell you all these things. You know, I could go on for hours and hours and hours about all the things that I've studied and researched, and I love sharing it with people. But it's all pointless if we can't fix the world that they say is broken. And I'm wanting to do that. I'm wanting to try to help out. So, you know, Knights of the Round Table on Sundays, Mad Science on Saturdays, both on People for People Radio Network and Shaziz Radio Network. I'd like to see all these chat rooms just cram-packed. I'd like to see them so full that we had to put more chat rooms out there just to make room, you know. And once we got that momentum and all of us working together, we could resolve these issues. We could resolve them together. We could build prototypes. I said in less than 30 days' time with the right team, we'd have an engine that run on pure distilled water using all of science and physics and the best mechanics. I'm telling you, it's doable. And what better fuel that you're going to get than water? You're not. And water is, it's not only, It's a life-giving substance. It's powerful. It's capable of so much. And what do you get out of the exhaust? You know, I talk about all these different technologies. I talk about combining technologies. I talk about taking the best of physics, the best of science, the best of mechanics, and putting the prototypes on the dang table for everybody to see. And that's it. That's how we're going to fix the world. We're going to wait around for them to decide to do it? Or is it going to be a last-minute rush to alternative energies or whatever? I want to see the people freed. I want to see the burdens of the people resolved. I want to see the people in these countries that they like to classify as third world countries. I want to see them fed. I want to see them sheltered. I want to see them have medicines that they need. Good medicines, not the trash that the mainstream medical likes to peddle. And not, obviously not the brutal torture of children by sitting there giving them chemotherapy, radiation therapy until they're so sick their hair falls out and their immune system is completely and utterly destroyed, when there are other alternatives out there like hyperbaric oxygen treatment and so many more that can quite literally cure these ailments. It's in our food, it's in our medicine, it's everywhere. I'm telling you, there is a answer for every single problem that you could potentially tell anybody. If it comes out of your mouth, you say it's a problem, there is an answer for it. And this is why I do what I do, because I really do care. Folks, you've been listening to the Mad Science Show. Stay tuned for the Music with Kara Hour. And once I get this podcast up, I had a crash in the middle of it. I think I got tried to play a bad podcast or something, or maybe they just didn't like what I was saying. But once I get the podcast up later, I'll put it all into one deal. And if you like today's show, please share it. Share it on your social media. Share it with your friends. Share it with everybody. You know, all I can say is peace and love. You've been listening to Mad Science. Take care.
What is the dream? The dream is to bring brilliant minds from every nation together to solve the world's problems, one positive pebble at a time. It will be we, the people of the world, that bring about true change, peace, and love to all. Governments never solve any problem, only create them. Wars, starvation, sickness, oppression, financial slavery, death and destruction is what governments do best. When all the military might of nations is used to destroy other nations, the question has to be asked, why not use that military strength for good? Feed the hungry, shelter the homeless, heal the sick, and so forth. True representation of truth, freedom, and justice comes from we the people, and it never came from slick-talking politicians that say whatever they have to get elected, and then regulate away your freedoms. There is no reason to have starving babies in the world of today. Yet, it goes on. There's no reason for wars and sickness, yet it continues. We as the people must stop feeding that beast that is eating humanity alive. We the people of all nations have the power to bring about a literal heaven on earth. You as an individual have more power than you can possibly imagine. You have the power of the spoken word. You have the power of the pen. The power of action, and most of all, the power of love. It is time to use this power to make our world a better place. We are the founding fathers, mothers, sisters, and brothers of our children, and of our children's children's future. Into the future and beyond, what we do today will define the world that they live in tomorrow. Let us from every nation come together and make that future a great one.
It was that ant that stood up to me.
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one ant.
Ooh.
One ant.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one ant.
Yeah, boys, they're puny.
Puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this?
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up.
Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life.
It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
I got a laptop. I make music with my friends. I've got a laptop, baby. I make music with my friends. There it is.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch your tongue.